Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's called PAD, peripheral arterial disease, and if you've got chronic leg pain, it may be time to get tested. Learn more at demanddebora.org. Call 609-621-2080 to schedule a screening.
With the Phillies in the third year of a much-publicized rebuild, there is much focus on the minor league system, the draft, and international signings. In short, who are the young guys that might rise to the majors and help turn this thing around? No media outlet does a better job covering these areas than Baseball America, a must-read publication for everyone in the baseball industry. John Manuel is the editor of Baseball America and one of the keenest observers of the game that I know. He joins me now to talk about the Phillies draft, the team's prospects, the rebuild, and what might lie ahead in next year's draft. All righty, and I'm with John Manuel of Baseball America. He's the editor at Baseball America, and we're both finishing up a long day at the at the Futures game here in Miami. And John has an early flight in the morning, but he's been kind enough to sit with me for a few minutes. And I really wanted to have you, John, because I love the guys at Baseball America. I mean, I think you are such a dedicated crew. Nobody respects the game more. Nobody loves the game more than you guys.
I appreciate
and,
it.
And it shows in your research and your writing and everything you guys do. And it's always been one of my favorite publications, so thank you for being with me.
Well, Jim, I appreciate you writing for us in the past and contributing, and just you know, we do love what we do. I mean, I tell people on Twitter all the time, I get to write about baseball for a living, and I've done it for 20 years now, and it has not gotten old in one bit. I feel like Ron Burgundy. It never gets old, you know. So coming to the same party for 20 years, and it is not old one bit.
So one of Baseball America's specialties is scouting, player development, minor leagues, and the draft. And we just had the draft less than a month ago. And it's big news in Philadelphia all the time. But lately, because the team is in a rebuild, they had the number one pick last year in Mickey Moniak. This year, they come in at number eight, and they pick Adam Haseley, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, left-handed hitting outfielder from the University of Virginia. He's already off to a good start. They sent him to the New York Penn League. He's up at Williamsport, off to a good start. Tell me a little bit about him from your perspective.
You know, we first saw Adam Haseley in high school at the first academy out of Orlando. They actually won the National High School Invitational Tournament, which is put on by USA Baseball, and played in our backyard in Cary. And that year's tournament was just lit. It was Tukey Toussaint and Jacob Gatewood and Michael Geddes and Foster Griffin, who we saw in the Futures game today. All these guys were supposed to be first-rounders. A lot of them were. And arguably, he was the best player there. And he carried his team to a win there. And in retrospect, that seems even more significant. That's the only non-California school to win that tournament so far. And of course, he went on to University of Virginia because he wanted to hit. He didn't want to pitch, but most teams liked him better as a pitcher out of high school because he's left-handed and athletic. And he didn't even want to pitch at Virginia, but he's just too good at it. So, of course, they didn't pitch him for a while. Then, of course, when they do pitch him, it's to start in the College World Series finals against Vanderbilt, and he saves their season. He hadn't pitched for 3 months, pitches five innings in game two of the finals. Virginia wins the national championship, first ACC team to win it in 60 years. So this guy's a winner. I mean, that's the number one thing about Adam Haseley. Then all he's done is kept on pitching, even though he didn't want to, because he's a team-first guy, and keeps on getting better as a hitter. I actually talked to Brad Wilkerson about a two-way, all these two-way guys.
Sure, former Florida Gator.
That's right. Montreal Expo,
he was
national.
Pitcher
and hitter in college. And he did it back. I told him, I said, he did it when it was easy. They used -5 metal bats. Like, the bats were juiced when he played. Haseley did it hard, and he worked with Adam Haseley. He helps coach with the Orlando Scorpions travel ball program. So he's seen Haseley as an amateur. He's worked with him in off seasons. He's like, I still can't believe he's going to be a first round pick. He keeps defying people who, you know, the scouting community thought he was a pitcher out of high school. Even Brad Wilkerson was like, yeah, maybe I thought he might be better as a pitcher. He keeps getting better, and he's got even a little bit of a rotational swing if you hear scouts talk about it. But he has a knack for the barrel. He knows the strike zone. I think he gets the most out of his tools. He's kind of like Moniak in that way. They have some similarities. I don't think he's as advanced defensively as Mickey was supposed to be as an amateur. I do think he has more power, more now power, and I'm not surprised he's tearing up the low minor. So I'm just convicted about the makeup on Adam Haseley. He's really a special kid. And his roommates at Virginia actually had a fake Twitter handle for him this year called The Rev Haseley. They just shut it down. I think it might still be on Twitter, but it was kind of making fun of, but also honoring how religious he is. And he, like, so he's got special makeup. I know that's cliched, but I believe it. The guy's been a winner. He just leaves a trail of winning behind him. And that's the kind of guys you need in your organization if you're trying to win. I understand why the Phillies were convicted about him.
It seems like Matt Klentak and his crew, they're trying to build around guys. He uses the expression all the time, control the strike zone. He walked more than he struck out.
Yes.
He barrels up the ball. He doesn't swing and miss a lot. Those are the type of guys they want. But it's really interesting to hear you say, and we know his baseball skills, but it's interesting to hear you call him a winner.
I think that's a separator for Adam Haseley. And there were two guys in the draft. I actually wrote about this in late April. Jaron Kendall of Vanderbilt was the guy with all the tools. You know, 7s on the card. You're talking about a scouting card. You know, 7 runs, 7 defense, 7 power. But it's like a 3-hit. You know, he struck out a zillion times this year. I mean, he struck out a lot. And Haseley, it might be 55s. Maybe it might get him a 6-hit. You know, if you might give him a true plus, it's the hitting ability because of the high level of hard contact. But he does everything well, and the most important tool is the hit tool. We should have learned this 20 years ago with Ruben Rivera, but there's still a lot of people who don't learn it, Jim, and the Phillies have learned it. We're not going to take a 3-hitter and think we can coach him up. That, I think Matt is right. I think the history shows guys who control the strike zone in college usually control it in pro ball, especially if they have hard contact. Haseley checks both those boxes. So I like that pick there. And again, I totally understand the conviction.
It took them a while to make that change, though. For a long time, they were, you know, Anthony Hewitt.
Oh, absolutely.
They were going for those guys with the tools who, if it clicked in development, you were looking at a special player.
Aaron Altair is one of those kind of guys. Has that body. Took him, what, 6-7 years to become to where he controls the strike zone well enough to be a useful major league player. But it's hard. It's really, I would rather you develop plate discipline when you're 15, 16. I think it's harder the harder you go up. When you're trying to develop it against big league stuff, good luck with all that.
Are you seeing a change in the Phillies' draft philosophy the last few years? Because they were, you know, they took a shot at those athletic, high ceiling, high risk guys. And, you know, now Moniak, Cornelius Randolph was a pretty polished high school hitter. Scuffed a little bit so far. But are you seeing a change under Johnny Almaraz? They took 9 out of 10 college players in the first 10 picks this year.
I think that's fair, though, that those last three picks, the best tool on any of those three guys, Randolph, Moniak, and Haseley, they all could hit. I mean, the Phillies, Johnny told me last year that he had a future 7 hit on Mickey Moniak. Everyone else loved the defense. They loved the defense, too, but they thought he could be a future potential batting champion. That's why they took him 1-1. Obviously, there are financial factors in there as well, but that's why they took Cornelius Randolph. That's why they took Adam Haseley. So I think you're right. There's a trend there, and that's what they're prioritizing, and that makes sense.
Before I kind of get into a few picks from this year's draft, Give me a little scouting report going back to Cornelius Randolph and Mickey Moniak, the last two number ones for the Phillies, and you know what you saw now, what you might be seeing, what you saw then, what you might be seeing now.
Yeah, you know, Mickey Mo is interesting. You know, I just remember talking to people last year before the draft, and people being like, "Man, Mickey Mo might go 1-1." Like the scouts I talked to in Southern California, they did not see that coming. But they saw the Phillies on him, and he really did get better last spring. Now, the question is, was it a little bit of a mirage, or is that the real Mickey Moniak? And our pro scout contacts this year, guys we've talked to, I've got some shared notes. We just did our midseason top 100. They were like, you know, he's good. We don't see 1-1 good. So that's our early reports, but it is early. You know, I think that Mickey Moniak might be one of these guys who he got in that strength program. He tried to get bigger this offseason. You never know. You might lose a little twitchiness when you do that, some of these guys. So he might have to go back to figuring out that body. That's what we hear, is that he's a little less twitchy than people thought he was. Hasn't been quite as explosive. Again, good, not great. I'm a believer in Mickey Moniak. I believe he has that magic bat, that feel for the barrel. It's that knack for hitting, and the power will come. But he might need to get a little whippier and a little twitchier. Cornelius Randolph, I'm just not a fan of the high school player where all the value's in the bat, where the first thing you do with a 10th overall pick is shift him to left field. I want a little more well-roundedness there. That's just me. That's my experience at Baseball America. As soon as they drafted him and shifted him from high school shortstop to left field, I just told you they weren't even expecting anything out of the defense, that all his value comes from the bat. And for me, if I'm going to pick that guy, I want to be Pat Burrell. You know, I want to be a college guy where I know he's got now hit, now power. That was a guy the Phillies took high, and it worked out. Maybe he wasn't the best player in that draft, but he certainly was a starter on a championship team. The Phillies got good value below these many years ago with Pat Burrell. You know, that's the same profile with Cornelius Randolph. So I don't love that in a high school player that high. I want more well-rounded, up-the-middle high school players.
That's about everything I hear. I hear he's kind of a one-tool guy.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't click, it's not a great pick.
It better be a 6 or 7. It better be a true plus. That's a lot of pressure to put on a kid.
Before we shift away from Haseley too much, in your mind, how quick of a mover can he be?
He's going to move fast because the guy can hit, and he's just a ball player. I mean, again, do I think he's going to be a superstar? I'm not going to put that on him. You know, like the Phillies, I've put this comp on too many guys, but like Aaron Rowand is like a comp I use a lot. Like I've actually used it with Albert Almora because it's a guy who's a good player but not a superstar. Maybe his peak might have one really big year, but mostly a grinder, winning ball player, plays middle of the diamond. I think this guy's going to control the strike zone more, maybe hit for a little less power than Aaron Rowan. I don't know if Adam Hazley's a 30 home run guy, but dude, Brad Miller hit 30 home runs last year with the Rays. I mean, everybody hits 30 home runs these years, so why should I put limits on Adam Hazley when he squares the ball up so much? I do believe in him. I like him as a player. I like him as a pick. Every player I know, these guys who play with him with Orlando Scorpions in high school, the other ACC players, they hold him in high esteem.
I mean, he should be a guy that we should see playing double-A ball next year.
Yeah. I was just about to say, it wouldn't shock me if he got double-A by the end of this year.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Evan Longoria did that. And this isn't going to be Evan Longoria. But Evan Longoria's first pro season with the Rays back in, what, 2006 now? And he had 20 home runs in his half a season in pro ball, finished the year in the double-A playoffs, was in the major leagues by the end of the next year. Haseley could be that guy. I mean, it's hard to be... Again, I believe in him a lot, probably more than I should.
John, I want to ask you about a couple more guys that jump out on this draft. So the Phillies in the second round, they go to Cal Poly and get right-hander Spencer Howard.
Yep.
And I think in a lot of minds, that was a surprise pick.
Yeah, I think it was. I think we were a little light on him in our draft rankings, and I will wear that as I am in charge of Western United States coverage. That's my quote-unquote area.
But that's okay. You're supposed to have an opinion.
That's right. So I was light on him. But mainly, though, I think I just was light on the fact that his velocity got better this year. I thought the reports I had on him previously kind of was who he was, and he got better. And again, in today's game, Jim, we just see everybody throws harder.
Yeah.
If you want to throw harder, guess what? They figure out ways for guys to throw harder. This guy threw harder. So just I wanted to refresh my memory. Yeah, he was hitting 96 late in the year. And that report, I wrote that report. That was a week and a half before the draft where I finally put him in. So I was light on Spencer Howard. And I think the Phillies had good reports on him and probably had history. He's got great makeup as well. Former walk-on. So this is not a guy who was handed things to him. Wasn't a showcase pony. This guy was a late developer. And if you're going to take a college arm, take a fresh one. That's what they may have gotten in Spencer Howard.
Tell us about Connor Seabold.
Connor Seabold is not a fresh arm. Connor Seabold is a classic Cal State Fullerton command control right-hander with a good fastball changeup combination and pounds the zone.
Like Tom Eshelman, who is now in AAA with the Phillies.
That's a good call. He does not have Tom Eshelman's. At the end of his junior year, Tom Eshelman was up to 91, 93. I don't think he's pitching there as a pro guy, but he does not have Thomas Eshelman. He's a poor man's Thomas Eshelman is what he is. I love Thomas Eshelman. Side note for Phillies fans, go on eBay or go find the 2015 Baseball America College Preview. We did a 40-year homage to Cal State Fullerton and Thomas Eshelman played along. It's my favorite cover of all time. I'm going to get weepy talking about it because him and Justin Garza just sold out for us and dressed up in wigs and 40-year-old uniforms, and it's just awesome.
I remember it well.
It's a great cover.
I've talked to him a couple times in spring training. Enjoyed talking. He's got a nice personality.
Oh, yeah. Good dude.
We're going to enjoy him in Philadelphia. Another guy that jumps out at me in the top 10, because I saw him play in the College World Series, Dalton Guthrie, the shortstop from University of Florida. How about a little bit on him?
Got a good story on Dalton Guthrie. So Dalton Guthrie's whole shtick is fundamental defense. Son of Mark Guthrie, gamer, Venice High School, was a star in high school in Florida, travel ball guy. Goes to Florida, three straight College World Series, wins a national championship this year. So the first game Florida plays, he makes two errors, and they were just fundamental errors. You know, I helped with my 12-year-old's youth baseball team, and you know, we're always talking about come gain your ground. Well, he laid back on a ground ball, and I'm sitting here thinking, come on, Dalton Guthrie, you're not supposed to do this stuff. And then he mishandles a flip at second base because he was tardy. It just seemed like his head wasn't in the game, and I tweeted about it. I criticized him on Twitter for bad defense. I said, bad look tonight at Dalton Guthrie, yada, yada. Next morning, he liked the tweet. So So the second game they play, he makes this sliding play to his left, like slides to his left, makes the catch at the same time, pops up, throws the first. I'm like, all right, Dalton Guthrie came to play today. So Florida wins that game. I go in the post game, and I know Alex Fado a little bit from just draft coverage. And I go, Alex, can you point out Dalton Guthrie to me? And Alex Fado goes, Dalton Guthrie, John Manuel's here to see you. And he's like ducking behind the couch in their locker room. And we just had a good talk about it. I actually had a tweet storm by another former Phillies prospect who they drafted 12 years ago, Victor Menocal, now was an agent, worked with Excel. And I lit into Victor's defense, apparently, which I don't remember this, when he played at Georgia Tech. And Victor printed it out, blew it up, put it in his locker, took hundreds of ground balls a day and helped Georgia Tech into the College World Series in 2002. And Dalton got motivated by my tweet about him. So apparently college players pay attention to what I say for the last 15 years, which is very flattering. But Dalton Guthrie said, yeah, it kind of fired me up. So he is a professional. He grew up with a son of a pro. He plays a professional game. He was coached as a professional at Florida because they have two former scouts in their staff. His bat is light, but he will be an excellent organizational player. And if the bat comes on, this guy's going to be a big league middle infielder. He's got really good hands, excellent internal clock. So I'm kind of a believer in Dalton Guthrie. And again, grinder makeup, but he just didn't hit this year. So getting him in the sixth round, I thought was a really good, very good value there. At the start of the year, this guy could have been a second, third round pick.
Anybody else kind of jump out at you in the Phillies draft, maybe a sleeper?
Ethan Lindau in the fifth round was the guy. You know, you don't usually get Alabama Birmingham signees who go high. And I had to give the bad news to my friend Perry Roth, who's the recruiting coordinator. And I told Perry, I said, I heard some buzz on Ethan Lindau. And he's like, yeah, I know. So I've known Perry a long time. And he knew he was going to wind up losing him because he's a projectable left-hander. Again, Georgia high school pitcher. Risky demographic. Not my favorite demo, but this guy is up to 92 as the season went on. There is projection. He's got some feel for off-speed stuff. Just something the best is yet to come for Ethan Lindau. 143rd pick, and they gave him $500,000. So, you know, UAB's loss could be the Phillies' gain.
And that was the only high school kid they took in the top 10, so they must really like him.
And the thing is, there were very few teams on Ethan Lindau. It was like three or four teams that were cross-checking him late. So that's just – the draft is so weird, Jim. I mean, you get these little pockets, you get these hotbeds, you get these teams that see the right guy. Brent Honeywell, who starts today at the Futures game, wasn't even drafted out of high school. And the scouts I talked to about him today were like, yeah, he had an early start. It was cold. He was throwing 85. Nobody went and cross-checked him ever again. I mean, like, the next year, he goes to junior college, he's a second-round pick. I mean, this is a hard game to scout, hard game to evaluate. All respect to the guys who put those dollar signs on the muscle and put their names on these guys. It is so hard to do. I have so much respect for
him. Yeah, scouting is a tough business.
Yeah, it's fun to write about. I'll say that.
Well, I want to, you know, we talked about some number ones, and obviously 2014, was it J.P. Crawford?
Yeah,
was it
Aaron 2013.
13 was Crawford, Aaron Nola was 14. So the Phillies take J.P. Crawford 17th overall, I believe.
It was pretty high.
And in 2013, and immediately vaults to the top of the Phillies chart. You know, good shortstop, pretty good bat, controls the strike zone, really good looking prospect.
Oh, yeah. Had a great cover on our magazine that one year.
And, you know, Philly's been buzzing about him for a long time. And then lo and behold, Baseball America, you guys come out with your midseason prospect report, and he has fallen mightily from 19 to 92.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You gotta tell us what happened there.
That has been one we've debated for a long time. In our preseason, I was like, I only talked to one guy who had pro coverage of him last year in the International League, and he just said, you know, he just doesn't impact the baseball in any way. And this guy had seen him when I first saw him in the Florida State League, where he did hit for power. And so I've always kind of been a J.P. Crawford believer, but last year he just didn't hit the ball hard consistently at all, really, in AAA. And, you know, I had actually a pro scout in the offseason. When I asked him, I said, like, do we have Crawford too high on this top 100? He goes, I'm not worried about the power. We use Titleists in this league, you know. So, you know, the balls are juice of the big leagues. Maybe he'll hit for power in the big leagues. But it's been a year in AAA, and it's been a lost year. He just doesn't drive the baseball. And you look around the big leagues, Jim, who has below average power who's an everyday regular in the big leagues anymore? Very few guys. It's guys like Jose Iglesias or Billy Hamilton. Guys who have like 70 or 80 speed or defense or catchers. But shortstops, even shortstops in the big leagues, they have some pop these days, and he doesn't.
Everybody I talk to says that they found the hole in his swing away off the plate.
He
tries
responded.
To spin on everything, pull everything. And he has not made those adjustments.
He's lost control of the strike zone, so the walk strikeout rate's gone a little sideways on him. I think he doesn't know how to get out of this rut that he's in. And hitting's hard. So we definitely had several people in our office who just wanted him off the 100.
Wow.
And just don't think he's a prospect anymore.
Some guys don't think he's a prospect at all. Wow.
Don't think he has a chance to be a big league regular. That's the way I'd say it. And I just think that to me, I thought it was way too dramatic to take him from 19 to out. So we kept him in the 100. But we basically, like, it's like what we do in our college top 25 rankings. Basically, when a team has a bad week that we were really high on, and we'll drop him really far. It's kind of like putting him on notice almost. Like, you know what? He's not, we don't see him as a impact player anymore. It's more of a high floor, like a solid regular, than a guy could be a building block. And that's fair.
Wow. I mean, it's just. Do you put any stock into the fact that he's very young still? I mean, I think he just turned – is he 22 yet?
I think he's 22, 23. I mean, I do.
I think he's 22.
I think you're
still
right.
Still young for that league.
Yeah, it's 22. He just turned 22 this year.
Just turned 22, young for that league.
I think the thing is for us is that the evaluations we've done and the analytics that we've used is not nearly as detailed as the clubs.
Yeah.
But – Theo Epstein told me 10 years ago, the higher you go in the minor leagues, the more performance matters. And the higher he's gone, the worse his performance has gotten. And, you know, I still think that he can be a big league regular, but I do have my doubts about him being an impact player. And a couple years ago, I was just a guy who was going to have solid average power, could be a 15 home run guy, and be kind of a slick shortstop who gets on base a lot. He still gets on base some. You know, 329 on base is solid, for especially when you're hitting 211, but I don't think you get respected at the big leagues if you don't drive the baseball.
Now, the cynics out there, mm-hmm. and we have a few in Philly, they're going to say, okay, this is the Baseball America crew that had Dominic Brown number one at midseason, same list.
But he hit 27 home runs
over Mike Trout. I mean,
I was in charge of that list, so please don't remind me.
But
was it Trout two?
Dominic was one, and I think Trout was two.
I think that's
right. But it just goes to show projection and scouting is a tough business. But
it is. But this is dramatic. There's no question. This is drastic to drop him this low. And again, there were others in the office who wanted to drop him even lower. But that full season that he basically has now at AAA and not making those adjustments, we didn't think that augured well. But again, we have. We were all over the place with the Phillies in this midseason list. We have we have believers in Jorge Alfaro. We have people in the office who are not believers in Jorge Alfaro. We have many believers in Sixto Sanchez. I'm one of them, but I still believe in Mickey Moniak a little bit more. The guy who has really won us all over is Reese Hoskins, because the bottom line is you don't get promoted to the big leagues when you make the 6-3, the routine play. You don't get promoted when you run a good time. You don't get promoted when you run the bases well. You get promoted when you hit. that guy hits. Yeah. And that chart they had tonight on the Boost Mobile, or the thing they had on the bottom of their bat with the bat speed thing. He was all over the chart tonight.
He was number one and number four, I think.
And he's a grinder. He's never had anything handed to him. I think his story, he's not a similar player, but, you know, he had a big cape. And he came into the year with like a lot of expectations. Then he hit maybe 9 home runs as a junior, but he didn't have a great junior year. Didn't hit for much power the year before. Fell to the 5th round. You know, Ryan Howard was a 6th round pick. This guy's a 5th round pick. Okay, yeah. so maybe.
And you look at, I just was writing about that today, that Hoskins was a 5th rounder, and he's sort of pushing Tommy Joseph, where a 5th rounder named Ryan Howard pushed a guy named Jim Thome.
Right. I mean, Rhys Hoskins can really hit, and he's a house of a kid. I mean, he's just a big boy.
Yeah, and he's. I think we're going to see him pretty soon here as they try to make a read on him for next year.
I think so. And, you know, last year, I got to give Ben Badler credit. I'm pretty sure he did our Phillies list last year, and he put Hoskins. He was convicted on Hoskins over Cousins. Cousins is the toolsier guy. I think 20 years ago, we would have ranked Dylan Cousins higher. But hitting, that's the most important tool. You just better hit, man. Because it's hard to hit in the major leagues. Those pitchers, like Crash Davis tells the guys in the back of the bus, he's like, they throw exploding breaking stuff in the big leagues and mid-90s fastballs. And that was 30 years ago. So you better have that knack, that feel for the barrel. And Hoskins has it. And so we're kind of convicted on him
right now. It seems like for a long time, Baseball America, you know, it started as such a scouting-oriented publication. And there was a big emphasis on tools. Are you guys shifting?
I think we just have tried over the years just to be realistic about that's the most important tool. I mean, if you can't hit, the rest of it doesn't matter. The rest of it can help you survive in the minor leagues and learn to hit if you have some of that feel for hitting. But I don't know what the multiplier should be in the algorithm and the spreadsheet, you know, for these clubs. I'm sure they have it figured out what the multiplier is for the hit tool if you're doing an OFP. An overall future potential, like that one number, but that's the most important tool. So I do think we've made that adjustment over the last. I've tried to make that as I was promoted editor in chief in 2005, and that was definitely one of the things I've tried to emphasize to the whole staff.
Are you using more analytics in your rankings?
I think we actually have gone back and forth on that one, and it really just depends on the writer. We have some writers who use more and some who use less, some who are definitely more scouting oriented and some who are more on the analytics. Matt Eddy is one of our most analytically inclined. And I've worked with him for 15 years. I've come to trust his numbers. So I also realize that sometimes we squeeze our grades together and we almost work in the 40-60 range more than the 20-80. And you can't be afraid to give an 80. That's how this setup is put. So you can't be afraid to put a 70 on Nicky Moniak's future hit. If you're convicted in him as a hitter that he's going to be a future batting champion, well, that's a 70. So you better use the whole scale or you lose that separation. So that's kind of, those are some of the adjustments we're trying to
tell
make.
Tell the listeners briefly how the 20 to 80 scale works.
Well, it's basically like a 50s major league average, and everything else it's supposed to be math, a standard deviation from the norm, or basically, but you know, most, I think the math is that 99.7% of major leaguers would fall on that 20 to 80 scale. So every once in a while, there's a 10 arm. Hey, Johnny Damon was below the scale. I mean, that was a brutal throwing arm. And Aroldis Chapman's off the top of this. That's a 90 fastball. You know, humans aren't supposed to throw 104. But everybody else fits in that scale. So Mike Trout is as close to a perfect player. As close to an 80 as we're ever going to see. So if he's the 80, you know, player, everybody else kind of falling in behind him. But you're looking for plus players. You win championships with guys who are 60s and above. And we do that in our prospect handbook. We put 20 to 80 kind of a rating on everybody. And you can't be really in that book if you're less than a 40, you're really not a prospect. Like a 35 is kind of an up and down kind of guy. I don't think we've ever had a 35 in the handbook yet. There haven't been farm systems that bad yet, but give the Marlins time. They'll get there. They're efforting that way.
I wanted to ask you about a few players individually. Sure. You talked about Hoskins. You mentioned Cousins. Mm-hmm. Is Cousins Adam Dunn?
No, he doesn't control. He's much more athletic, but he doesn't control the strike zone like Adam Dunn. Just way more. Fewer walks and not the swing and miss, but he's a better athlete.
Is he Chris Davis?
The Orioles guy? That would be a best-case scenario, but I don't know that he even has that feel for hitting. Okay. You know, he's just so streaky, and his defense.
Are we going to see him in the big leagues? Is it?
You know, I haven't talked to anybody this year about him, but he's on the borderline. And our reports on him are not great on the makeup, all the superlatives I use about Adam Haseley. I don't have teammates talk about Dylan Cousins in that way. So I don't know that he's going to maximize his significant physical gifts. I'm not a big Cousins guy, to be honest. I enjoyed his speech at the winter meetings this year where he railed on minor league baseball for not paying players, very subtly and wisely did it. But I was actually talking with someone in the Cousins camp last year after the Futures game at the airport, and he asked me, why isn't Cousins higher on your list? I said, he's a two defender, like bottom of the scale defender, and I hear bad things about the makeup. He said, that's fair. And that wasn't the guy in his camp. So those reports haven't changed.
You mentioned six, though. I saw Bart Braun today, Philly scout, mm-hmm. and he was down there working out a Cuban catcher in Dominican. And it was the job of an area scout to bring some BP pitchers in. They brought this converted shortstop to throw BP. His name was Sixto Sanchez.
Nice name.
Bart Braun says, I don't like the catcher, but I like this kid, the pitcher. I'm going to see what it takes to sign him. The kid said $35,000. They got the $35,000, and they signed him. He's plus fastball, real good feel for his off-speed,
yep.
real nice delivery, athletic. He looks like a winner. What do you hear about him?
What I hear is plus stuff, and he throws a ton of strikes.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, just talking to a scout today about this Brent Honeywell story, he said, boy has to be able to throw fastball strikes and get swings and misses with fastballs in the strike zone to be a big league starter. If you don't do that, we start shuffling you to the bullpen. Sixto's doing that. And as long as he keeps on doing that, like you said, that feel for his off speed, to me, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
It's hard. He's a guy that's really hard that we tend to get carried away with at Baseball America sometimes. And we're not perfect for sure, but he's a guy.
It's hard not to get carried away with him. They have a lot.
He hasn't failed yet. That's why.
There's a lot of quantity in this system. Guys that project to be big leaguers, maybe not the transcendent guy. I kind of look at him as maybe if everything clicks and there's a long way to go developmentally, but he could be the guy that it could be a real difference maker. I think he's a real exciting talent. I mean, you talk about another tools guy, Alfaro. The power arm, the power bat. I don't know if there's going to be enough contact.
Right.
And I don't know if he can block and receive well enough to be a big, you know, difference maker behind the plate. And they need somebody to emerge behind the plate.
No,
what do you hear about Alfaro?
You know, last year he got better with the left hand, but catching's changed probably more than anything. The evaluation used to be the right arm. Now it's the left arm. How do you present? How do you frame? The blocking and the receiving, he's always been iffy with that. Pass ball numbers are always to the roof of this guy. Until last year, but now he backs a little bit. It sounds like physically he's not in the shape that he was last year coming off that off year where he had, the broken wrist or the Tommy, whatever the surgery he had the previous year, I forget. He came off that year as he's springier, athletic, and worked harder at blocking. And we haven't heard those same reports this year. It sounds like the defense, the blocking, the receiving have gone backwards again. So he's a tough one. And, you know, Matt Eddy's always worried, telling me all the time, the highly ranked prospects who get traded, he always worries about because he thinks the team that had him knew something.
Oh, I agree. I think there's always a reason somebody gets traded. I mean, another guy in that trade, Nick Williams.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's in the big leagues now.
Right.
Real free swinger. Do you think he'll ever reel it in enough to be a contributor at the big leagues?
I think he'll be a contributor. I don't think he'll be a star for that reason. He has star tools. He has star athleticism. This guy should be a center fielder, but he seems content to be a left fielder because he could run to play center, but he's never gotten the route. So he's always kind of been compared to Carl Crawford in that way. And Carl Crawford was a really good player. I hesitate to say great. Felt like he should have been a great player. And his career certainly seemed like it ended sooner than it should have.
How about Kingery? Philly's the city buzzes about this kid.
I'm on that guy.
Gritty, he's Chase Utley-like.
Look at his forearms. Just look at his forearms. He's just, that's where all his strength is from here down, from the elbows down. You know, he kind of reminds me of is Ian Kinsler.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got that kind of way that he plays. He doesn't play the prettiest second base, but it's effective. He's an athlete, power, speed. And again, former walk-on.
Yeah.
And we have an actual feature in the next issue of Baseball America about him and Kevin Newman, who's with the Pirates, was his teammate at Arizona. And those guys were second base, shortstop. Only played together 1 year, actually, in the middle diamond because he was a center fielder, moved into second base. Newman was the guy from the start who was supposed to be the star. By the end of his junior year, what we've always been told is Andy Lopez was telling scouts, you don't want Newman, you want Kingery. Kingery's the MF-er of these two guys. He's the tough one. He's the one who's got some sack. Newman's kind of the pretty boy. So I'm using a little, there's more off color I could use there, but I'm on Team
mess,
Scott
yeah.
Kingery. I love that kid.
Yeah.
And he was so jacked to be in the Futures game yesterday when we interviewed him at the Baseball America prospect pad. He held up his jersey. You could see it meant something to him. And then for him only to get one at bat today and kind of get buried in the lineup, I felt bad for him. that he didn't get to do a little, show a little bit more in the future.
He did get buried a little bit. I will tell you, he played a ton the first 2 weeks of big league camp, and he was all over the field.
Yeah.
Best player on the field many days. Line drives, hit some power, made great plays, showed great instincts in the middle of the diamond. So people are justifiably excited about him.
He's a ball player.
He is. The Phillies, you know, we're in year three of the rebuild. Some people say year two because it's Klentak's second year, but it's really year three. November of 2014, Pat Gillick said, that's it, you know, when he was kind of in charge, we're rebuilding here, and they made big trades, and they scaled back, and it's been tough, man, especially after that great run, 07 to 2011. But
it has to be.
They had the best team
in baseball, basically, from those 5 years. I know there's only one World Series championship, but those are hard to win. And all those great moments, all those great players, has to be hard dismantle it.
What do you think went wrong? The inability to sustain. Was it just not bringing enough talent? Was it the drafts?
That's a good question. You know, that 2008
system went way down.
Yeah, I think the Phillies did take a lot of risks in the draft. They did lose some first round picks to signing free agents. But I always thought it was really just some of they got old fast. And, you know, it would have worked if, you know, that playoff series, what was that? It was the one playoff series the Reds won, right? It was the Reds they lost to, or 2010? I forget who they lost. Oh, that was the Giants.
2011 was the killer when they win 102 games. They have Lee and Holiday.
Right.
And Cole Hamels. And they have a bad week against St. Louis Cardinals.
Howard
blows out.
That's right. Those 2 years were the pitching staff of all pitching staffs was assembled. You had Halliday, Lee, Hamels, like you said, Oswalt. Those 2 years are probably where they were the favorite each year going in, because you win a World Series in 2008, you lose in 2009, and then you add Halliday. I mean, really, Halliday, best pitcher in the game at that time. That's tough to swallow, but that's baseball history, really, isn't it? I mean, how many times the best team won?
Yeah, well, it was.
It doesn't always happen.
And what a crazy night that was—the night they lost to the Cardinals. I think it was October 7th of 2011. Howard blows out. Roy Halladay was never the same. Chris Carpenter was never the same.
Never the same.
It was
three
careers changed that night dramatically. But
Howard blowing out was a big part of it, and he had the big contract.
It hadn't even started.
Right, hadn't even started. But that was where everything turned for that front office as well. So
if they win that series, Ruben Amaro is still the GM. I'm convinced.
No question.
World Series, and now he is the steward of the rebuild.
No question. Instead
of someone else.
And he started the rebuild belatedly, but he started pretty well. The deals that he made were late, but pretty good. So I do think, though, that this is just kind of also the fact that they were so resistant to join kind of the new wave of the game, the analytics that have taken over the game. When the commissioner's office is forcing a guy on you like that, there's no way ownership's going to think that's a good thing, you know? So I think those are the things. I think Ruben got over-criticized for some of those things, but I think it's inevitable. Everybody in baseball is hired to be fired, right?
Well, how do you think the rebuild is going now? Where do you think, judging from what you see in the drafts and the guys they have in the system, I mean, how far away are they? Are they heading? Are they trending upward in this rebuild?
I think they are.
Even though the big league product is really bad right now,
it's bad. But seven players in our midseason top 100. Haseley is the last one. Includes Crawford. It doesn't include Cousins. And they do have depth. Like you said, they don't have that separator. The other teams that have as many prospects in their system like that, the Yankees have that many in our top 100. They have Gleyber Torres. I know he's hurt. But that's a potentially transcendent player. Plus, they have Judge and they have Sanchez. They have some game changers. The Braves are loaded. It's all they've done is hoard prospects. And John Hart could not contain his glee at our winter meetings. I got to work with him some of the MLB Network, so he's comfortable being a little loose around me. And he is just F-bombs left and right about Ronald Acuna, who we saw today, and that throwing arm. Ronald Acuna just throwing it like you and I are just playing catch, and he's uncorking one all the way to home on the fly. They have all kinds of tools. They're totally loaded up with pitchers. The Braves are going to be a player, and they're in that division. The Nationals aren't going away, and they have the money. They have Scherzer. So it's a tough neighborhood. And then you look at the Padres farm system, deeper, very exciting, very young, very Latin American. They spend so much money in Latin America. The Phillies have had so much success not spending, and then when they go step out with $4 million on Jalen Ortiz, I don't know about that one. And Sal Agostinelli, I trust. That guy's really good
at what
he does.
He's a bargain shopper.
He is, and he's really good at it. Sixto Sanchez at 35 grand.
Sixto, I mean, you know, Freddie.
Going back to Domingo Santana or whoever. They've done it for a decade with Sal. So so I do think the Phillies draft well. I do think their international development is good. And I do think they traded for good prospects in that Cole Hamels trade. But is there a game changer? I think you hit on it earlier. That's the real question. They need a game changer. And it's really up to Matt Klintak now to evaluate their own system. What do they have? And who is that game changer? And do they still need to go find that? That's a tough, that's the tough part, evaluating your own talent. So that's because that's where you see the tools. You got to know what's inside. And that's why Haseley stands out for me, because the makeup there is unquestioned.
Well, number one pick in 2016, they're headed to the number one pick in 2018. I actually think it's a slam dunk. Real quick.
That they're going to be the number one team?
Yeah.
Okay.
That they're going to have the number one pick again next year. I mean, don't you? It looks like.
I thought there was one other team contending.
I mean, the Giants were kind of kicking around a little bit, but they might get Bumgarner back.
Yeah. They're not trading him or Posey.
You know what? It's been tough to watch this year, but having a number one pick is not the worst thing in the world for a rebuilding team.
It's not.
Just real quick, how does next year's draft, as you look through your periscope and kind of, how does it look?
It's fascinating because there are a lot of good high school players. The high school shortstop named Bryce Terang out of Southern California, his dad played pro ball. He's been famous for a long time in the amateur scouting parlance. So Bryce Terang's a name to know. There are all the three best high school pitchers are all from Georgia. Again, I hate that demographic, Georgia high school pitchers. This is how in the weeds I am, Jim. But one of those guys' name is Kumar Rocker. He's 6'4", 260. I mean, he's basically like an African-American version of Jonathan Broxton. He's huge. His lower half is just enormous. His dad played SEC nose tackle.
Wow.
So, but this guy throws a ton of fastball strikes. That's going to be fascinating. What are teams going to do with a 6'4", 260 high school pitcher from Georgia? I can't wait to find out. And on the college side, you have Brady Singer. Just helped pitch Florida the national championship. Unsigned second-round pick. Why was he unsigned? He didn't pass his physical with the Blue Jays. He threw 126 innings this year for Florida and was fantastic in Omaha. And his stuff is electric. But then the other three top college players are a 5'7" shortstop, Nick Madrigal at Oregon State.
I love watching him in the World Series.
Well, that's because he's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, he's another Sacramento kid, Elk Grove. So same neighborhood as Hoskins. He is Dustin Pedroia cloned. I think he might run a little better than Petey, maybe not quite that level of power. Very similar player. And then you have Seth Beer at Clemson and Lucan Baker at TCU. Seth Beer is like two run, two defense, three arm, seven hits, seven power. He's basically like Big Poppy at age 20.
Wow.
But like the way Poppy ran at 40. He runs like it hurts to run. What do you do with that guy? He's the best hitter in college baseball. And then Lucan Baker, if it's not Seth Beer is the best hitter, it's Lucan Baker, who was a two-way guy, won the junior home run derby 3 years ago, and was a two-way player out of high school, but hurt his right arm, stopped pitching. This year he hurt his left arm, so he couldn't play in the College World Series. But when he's on, he's basically like a less athletic Paul Goldschmidt at 6'4", 260 with ridiculous power. So they're extremes on the college side, and they're these kind of extremes on the high school side. The safest bets are Terang on the high school side, Singer on the college side. But what we've seen lately is the safest bets aren't always what they go for at the top of the draft. They go for value, and like a kid like Mackenzie Gore went third this year to the Padres, who's a Whiteville, North Carolina, a small town lefty with a Cole Hamels body and a yacker of a breaking ball. I'm in love with Mackenzie Gore, so. The teams will take the risk. They'd rather risk $7 million in the draft than risk $100 million in the big leagues, and that's why they will take those riskier high school players early. So it's fascinating because the game changes in these cycles, and they come faster and faster than they ever used to.
Good stuff, John.
You can see how much I love doing it. Why would I stop?
Hey, thank you so much. And
it was fun, Jim. I love talking about this stuff.
Thank you, and I'm sure the Phillies fans are going to enjoy this. Thanks, John.
I hope so. Thank you.
Those were great insights from John Manuel. He's one of the best. I hope you enjoyed my chat with him as much as I did. I'm Jim Salisbury. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time at The Yard.
It's called PAD, peripheral arterial disease, and if you've got chronic leg pain, it may be time to get tested. Learn more at demanddebora.org. Call 609-621-2080 to schedule a screening.